You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. There's a number of things that I want to talk about, Wayne. Two things in particular. One is in, well, two things actually that are pertaining to the United States of America and the world. One is inflation. The other one is the presidential debate last night. But I want to start with Anglo-American Platinum because this isn't a great story, but it almost feels as though there's some sort of capitulation. Can you tell me about the accelerated book build and the share price reaction, please?
Well, look, as you know, Anglo-American are going to unbundle AmPlats. Yes. That was the original story, and that was all the market knew about Anglo-American and AmPlats, was they were just going to distribute the shares that they own, which is, I don't know, 70% of the company.
Yes.
And just give it to shareholders and then do whatever you want to with that. And then yesterday they come up with this accelerated book build, which was, if I remember correctly, about 5% of the share capital of AmPlats. I mean, it's not massive, but it's not inconsequential either. And they, what did they raise, $7 billion?
Yeah, anyway, it's
something
billions.
Like that. Yeah. So and all of a sudden it comes out at 515 rand a share. And the share was trading at about, what, 580 or something, which seemed to be the bottom. It hit just below 600 three times this year, and then it's quickly bounced back off that level. So now it may have set a new bottom here for the share price. So I don't know what Anglo, why they went and actually did the accelerated book build and not just unbundled AmPlats. They obviously wanted some capital. They obviously needed capital for something, and they decided to do this book build. And, you know, they took a price of almost 10% lower than the market price or something like that. Yeah, so, yeah.
It's unpleasant, of course, around a 10% fall, but I get the impression that there's an opportunity here, and this is maybe me being an optimist in the face of extreme provocation, but
I'll join the club.
It does look to me as though, as I said in my introduction, some sort of capitulation going on here.
Yeah, look, I mean, the share price has got you. I thought it had capitulated already, and clearly I've been wrong on this because I've been saying platinum shares, AmPlats for a very long time now, and all the share has done is essentially go down. So I feel a bit embarrassed about this, but I still maintain on a 3 to 5 year view that these are screaming buys at these levels.
Yeah.
But today's movement just reminded me of the 2015 story on the platinum shares and, well, all the mining shares, but the platinum shares and Kumba, you know, it just bombed before it actually turned around. So down 10% today. I'm just having a look at the prices, yeah. And I mean, that must be a 12-month low. Yeah, the 12-month, 12-month low, yeah.
Yes, it's breaking lows. And if you look at the graph, I'm looking at the five-year graph now. And if you go back to the beginning of 2022, it was 225 Rand a share. The first of the second 2022, it closed at 225 rand a share. What am I looking at here? 225, is that correct?
I can have a look here now myself.
And I've got 50. You see, it's rounded it down. But anyway, 2250 versus 515. That's what I'm trying to say here. So 2250, yeah. 2022. 2.5 years later, it's 515. Let's call it per share.
Yeah, I'm just getting it now quickly.
That's pretty big moves. Currently down on the JSE 9.8% after the pronouncement from the parent company, Anglo-American. And, yeah, I mean, how much lower can it go? I don't know. You'll come up with all sorts of statistics, you know, book value and all that sort of thing and reserves and stuff, which are beyond me. But anyway, you're digging up your charts. But I think 2250 in 2022 was the high.
No, 2,500 odd was the high.
Okay.
It was about 2,500 rand a share.
Mm-hmm.
But I've just called up the long-term chart now.
Right.
So in the glory years for platinum, which lasted a full, 25 years. Amplats went from $100 to 1,000, call it 1,300. Then you had the global financial crisis, and it went from 1,300 down to 200, call it. And then it probably went from 200 to 2,500, and now it's gone 2,500 down to the five hundred. Just call it 500. You know, so the share price now is approaching the 2015 absolute collapse of the commodity cycle type of levels.
Yes,
it can stay there for a while. It can get cheaper, but you know, from these levels, it just is fundamentally good value on the longer term. And of course, the big danger to platinum, obviously economic growth, but all of that cyclical. The structural danger to platinum is battery electric vehicles, not hybrid, but battery electric vehicles. That's the true danger to platinum, to the PGMs. Now, when you look at what's happening with battery electric sales, they're tanking. In other words, people are going for hybrids.
Yes.
And they're not taking up battery electric nearly as strongly as what a lot of the motor car manufacturers thought they would. So was it last week or whenever Mercedes-Benz announced they're scaling back on their electric vehicle plans? And in any case, and I'm sure I've said this before, you know, there's 1.3 billion internal combustion engines in the world, and most of them, overwhelming majority motor cars, and there's about 100 million new car sales per year.
Right.
So even if new car sales were all battery electric, it would take 10, 12, 13 years for the pool to be replaced. You know, so you still need exhaust, you still need a lot of stuff. Now, at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, electric vehicles are about 15 to 20% of new car sales, and it seems to be stalling there. And the percentage of electric vehicles on the road is still minuscule. It's still incredibly low. You know, it's probably less than 10% of, I mean, yeah, certainly, and I know it's different in Europe and the UK and the US, but yeah, in South Africa, you don't even see an electric vehicle.
Well, there's nowhere to plug it in, of course. We know that.
Yeah, you don't even see an electric vehicle here. So in other words, I still think there's a good future in medium term for platinum and palladium, and yet the price is tanking. But, you know, you can just recall back to 2014, 2015, there was no future for commodities at all, eh? And yet within 3 years, this thing had essentially gone up, call it tenfold.
I think you might have to wait a little while for the tenfold move again. Yeah, I think you might have to wait for that. And the reason I say that is because I'm bringing in another commodity, the commodity that is the most traded by value and by volume and importance, and that's oil. And oil has fallen in the last 10 days from 76.5, 77 down to what I'm seeing on my screen now, and I'm talking about the Brent crude variety, $69.80. And that is a really, really big move. And if you look back this year, it was above $90 a barrel at one stage. And it's been a precipitous fall, but in an orderly fashion. And the fact is, Wayne, that that is a bear market. We're in a bear market. And you know what that means? It's not to do with Russia selling more to India and China at discounted prices, although that is a factor. It's to do with the fact that there's less demand and oversupply. Yes. And that means there's a recession in whatever form it takes coming to us, Wayne.
Quite possibly, yes, but there's also lower interest rates coming to us.
Which is great.
And whatever form of recession or slowdown there is, it's nothing like the 2008 global financial crisis or the previous crisis that we've seen. It's nothing like that.
Agreed.
So it might be an economic slowdown. So in other words, oil's been trading very broadly now, very, very broadly since 2005, between, call it, 60 and 90. So it's actually been moving sideways for an incredibly long time.
Yes.
Okay, look, it's gone above 100. It's gone, you know, when they had that funny thing in America where you actually we're very similar, and we can talk about this later as well, very similar to Spar selling their Poland business.
Didn't it go negative at one stage, technically?
It went negative. If you were selling oil, if I was selling you a barrel of oil, I would have had to pay you $20.
Exactly. And it was $20 or $15. Yeah, amazing situation that was. And the oil traders made a fortune.
That was a storage issue. It was weird, but it happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, it went down to those very low levels. Let's say it went below 50. You know, 2 years later, a year later, was back at 130. And that's the nature of commodities. You know, when the prices are low, there's no future. It's dead. Because remember, the oil was also smacked by all this talk about electric vehicles and industrial revolution, and there's no future for oil. And as a result of all of this talk and all of these structural changes, no one's invested in new production of anything except maybe copper. So there's no new oil wells, no new oil fields being developed. There's no new platinum mines. There's no new coal mines. There's no new iron ore mines, nickies. The resource companies haven't spent money since 2015. So if there's any sniff of a demand increase, these prices are going to shoot up because there's no new supply coming on stream. But, you know, when you're at the bottom of a commodity cycle, you cannot see good news anywhere. Same as when you're at the top of a commodity cycle, you can't see bad news anywhere. And that is the nature of a cycle, and in particular a commodity cycle.
Which is why I'm going to ask you the next question now. And you can say, Lindsay, that's confidential. I'm not going to tell you. Would you be buying, or are you buying, Anglo-American Platinum at, let's call it, 515 Rand per share, because you believe in everything you've just said?
The answer is yes.
Good. Thank you for being honest. Let's go now to the United States of America. We've spoken about oil. It's below $70 a barrel for Brent crude. Big move. 10% in a week. Inflation in the United States. I watched Trump saying, and I don't know what political leanings you have, but if any, but he says, well, the price, inflation has run riot. It's down to 2.5%, Wayne, which is great.
Yeah, that is good news. So it's at the target range. Mm. I'm sorry, I must have missed that. When did the inflation number come up?
About 2 hours ago. But it came down from 2.9% to 2.5%. Housing and shelter, as they call it, is stubborn, but it's come down from 9.1%, the peak recently, to 2.5%. And it just shows you that it's nothing to do with the administration, whether it be Democrat or Republican.
No, it's got nothing.
Nothing. It's to do with global trade flows and geopolitics.
And politicians are the worst animals in the world. If something goes well, they'll claim credit for it, even if they had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
And if something goes bad, they'll blame the other guy, whoever's in charge, for it. Politicians are quite frankly, terrible animals.
Oh, they're horrible creatures. I don't know how they get away with it. I watched the debate last night.
I don't know how we as a allegedly civilized society let politicians run our lives, run the country and run our lives. I just can't comprehend it.
When you get to a certain age, Wayne, you wake up at a certain time every night and need to go to the bathroom. I don't know if you do or if you sleep throughout the night. But anyway, around about 3 to 3.30 every morning, I get up and I go to the loo. And I thought, crikey, it's 3.27, which was exactly when I woke up. I turned on CNN and I watched the last hour of the debate. Trump is unbelievable. He believes these things. He said that people from Haiti are eating pets in
eating
Ohio.
Dogs, cats and dogs in Ohio, yeah.
And this is supposed to be the most Ohio. Powerful man in the you world. Know, and it's extraordinary.
He says those people, they're eating the dogs there.
And
these people are eating the cats. These people are eating the domestic animals. And I mean, it is, from what I can ascertain, it is completely and utterly unfounded.
It's nonsense. It was a hoax tweet, someone said.
He doesn't give any facts to back up his statements. He is truly astonishing. He yelled at reality series, whatever it was called.
It was called The Apprentice. Mm.
The Apprentice. You should be in a comedy show, man.
He should be in a mental asylum. But that's a, you know, with Trump, he shouldn't be running for president because you can't have that type of person in the White House. He should be at home being attended to by mental health professionals on a 24-hour basis and getting his fast food from the American chains and watching television all day. He has no place in polite society. And I'm going to get in so much trouble for this, but it seems to me that a lot of South Africans support Trump. Maybe you don't, maybe you do, I don't know. But he is a disaster zone and he should be removed from circulation. I've said it.
Look, when you look at his utterances and what he says, you shake your head and just think, is this, well, first of all, was he president? Now look, let's go back a step.
Go on then.
You know, when before he became president, he was just bombastic. But that's not, he's not the only politician who's been bombastic.
Quite right.
And when he came in, he said, I'm going to clear the swamp. I'm going to drain the swamp. And I think the swamp in American politics is absolutely awful. You know, there's so much insider dealings and wheelings. And I think that's why Hillary Clinton lost against him, because he should have been easy to beat. Because he just gave you the ammunition to beat him.
Yeah.
But obviously she was just seen as so an insider in the American politics that people didn't accept her. Okay. But now, second time around, after his conviction and his court cases and just listening to his policies, you know, he's going to sort out the Russian-Ukrainian war in a day.
In 24 hours, exactly right. I don't know. This is outrageous. The saddest thing, though, Wayne, before we move on...
You can't actually believe it.
What I can't believe, Wayne, is not that Trump is who he is, because I've known and I've sort of got a mini-obsession on him and his pronouncements, as you call them, and that's a good word. I can't believe that 30-40% of the American voting population actually believes this nonsense that he spews out every single day. Not every week or month, but every single day.
But look at,
that's
but
the just, most depressing you, thing.
Mm. Yeah, it just shows you the absolute intolerance for standardized, normalized American politics.
Yes.
It just shows you people are just so absolutely tired and sick to death of the way it's done that they're going to vote for Trump. No matter who he is or what he is or what he says, they are just totally and utterly sick and tired of the American politics way. Now yeah, in South Africa, the general population truly got sick and tired of the Zuma years. And then unfortunately or fortunately, depending on what your views are, then just got tired of the ANC and voted them out of power. But I can say one thing, then the Vice President Harris has got a better chance of beating Trump at the polls than President Biden had, because
it's been a huge turnaround. I mean, the polls, I mean, it's a refreshing change because, well, first of all, she's 59 versus 78, and what's Biden, 80. So there was that, and she can actually speak. She was so well prepared last night. I admit to watching it live. I admit to watching it again in full this morning and analysing it, and it was incredible the way that she goaded and baited Trump the whole time. It was a wonderful moment in my television life this year. But she will be president, I'm certain. She's not the best candidate, but she's much, much better than Trump, because if Trump gets in, then it's all over. He will, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to dictate and he's going to be a disaster. The stock market will love it because he'll cut rates so that his failing empire can have cheaper bills every month. Because it's in such debt. But Harris is going to win.
If you examine what Trump said he was going to do before he became president, and what he actually did, are polls and are country miles apart, eh?
Yeah, always.
So as I understand, this is just 90% of it is just talk. You know, when you come to, like any opposition politician, you can talk. When it comes to doing, it's a hell of a lot more difficult.
Hmm.
So what he did do was he loaded the Supreme Court with right-wing judges.
Yeah.
And America will have to live with that for a very long time because they're appointed for life.
For life. I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it? You can mess up, but yet it doesn't matter. I'm a Supreme Court judge. I'm here for life. And that's what my contract that I signed 6 months ago says. That woman.
Yeah.
And Kavanaugh as well.
And then you look at it and you say, right, okay, they must still be guided by the law. But the law at the constitutional level in America and in any country is open to a lot of, what can you call it, interpretation.
Hmm.
You know, so to absolve a president from any liability for a criminal act that he committed as the president, I mean, that just gives you free license to do absolutely anything.
Hmm. He once famously said,
"Be subject to other rules and regulations as well." You know, there's one thing about, let's call it the capitalistic system or the Western system, whatever you want to call it, the world's way. Other than even China's capitalistic, except for their politics. So it's only really North Korea that's not capitalistic, essentially. It has a way of sorting out complications and anything that's fundamentally doesn't work well in the system. It might take a lot of time, but eventually it is sorted out. You know, so this massive move towards this Trumpism move, MAGA move in America has got to reach its zenith, and maybe that's right now, before it actually just, you know, sort of like peters out. Because the system actually is self-correcting. You know, like stock market bubbles, when shares go to astronomical prices and it's not justified, the system will sort it out. If you're in a industry that's in decline, you know, the system will sort it out. That industry will continue to decline, and the new industries that are viable will, you know, come to the fore. So, you know, unless you have a dictator in charge, there's almost over time self-balancing mechanisms in the system that sorts out excesses. You know, like maybe even in the UK, it's not nearly the same level. But the idea of sending refugees to Rwanda, I mean, where did this even surface? This was a viable option.
It's the most extraordinary thing. An aeroplane takes 150, 200 people. And the UK has got 60, 70,000 immigrants that are a problem, not because they're a problem, but because housing them and feeding them and assimilating them into UK society is a problem. But to send 150, 200 back once we to Rwanda, a lot of them came from Africa because they don't want to be in Africa.
And then how many millions were spent by the UK taxpayer on each person there?
Oh, gosh. No idea. I mean, I'm all for immigration.
So anyway, that was sorted out. I mean, anyone who thought that was a viable option, I mean, maybe they're watching too much football and they saw, you know, was it Visit to Wonder, wasn't it?
How can anyone watch too much football, Wayne? You know, how can your partner watch too much rugby? But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, no, I got you on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I was going to say one more thing about Trump before we go. He once famously said, "I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot someone dead and nothing would happen to me." That is the sort of person we're talking about. I noticed that the S&P 500, since we've been talking, has taken a real tumble. It's now down 1.3%. And the explanation is from CNBC.com is that traders are digesting the inflation data. Well, the inflation data is good, which means interest rate cuts are coming. I think the market wants to go down, and the market is anticipating.
So, well, the market's gone up so much in anticipation of the interest rate cuts.
Yes.
That it would be quite normal to see some weakness now because there's no more debating. They're happening next week. You know, so you know, the market will often run up to record highs and then because of an event, and then on the eve of that event happening, it will give some of it back because people say, well, look, it's in the news, it's in the price already, so it's not that unusual. So there, the classic case there is obviously NVIDIA, and it runs up to 140, 145, and nothing's going to stop it. Then the next minute, it's 100. And nothing's changed with the company.
If it went to 75, yeah. I mean, it's still quite a highly valued company and still a good company and will continue to be a good company for years and years to come. Yes. Before we leave the United States, Wayne, the stock price of Trump Media plunged at the opening bell to its lowest level since the company began publicly trading as DJT on the NASDAQ, and that was after the debate because they realised that he's lost. September volatility. Well, everyone talks about October volatility, Wayne. Sorry to talk over you. October volatility because of the crashes that have occurred in October, but September is notoriously the worst month. And the headline is on CNBC, Dow drops more than 600 points as September volatility persists. So let's get September out of the way and use this as a buying opportunity. Yes or no?
Probably yes. I don't like these sell in May and go away type. In other words, I don't like investment stories that are time-based or, I don't know, seasonal-based or, you know, because I'm sure if you do a study and you're selective with your data, you'll find that the stock market either falls or goes up every new moon. You know, every time there's a conjunction between Saturn and Uranus. So I'm very, very cautious about, you know, it's now September, the market's going to fall. And statistically, it is correct that September probably is the worst month. And that's all good and that's all fine, let me tell you, until the year you try and profit from that. That's the year it doesn't work.
Yeah, which is why you just stick to your basic principles. Statistics allow you to do anything. Someone will say, yes. Well, if you plot the sales of Italian ice creams in Venice in August and plot it against inflation in the United States, you'll see there's a huge correlation. It's all nonsense. Yeah. Wayne, I have to talk about something more serious as we approach the last five minutes of our podcast, and that's food. And I have to tell you that what I'm going to say to you now is entirely down to you. You are completely responsible for the mania that has invaded my culinary life over the last week. You spoke about going to the Troyville Hotel with the world's biggest rugby fan watching a match in there, and I took it all in. I listened to it and I thought, oh gosh, I've got this seafood and prawn craving now. And I sent you a picture, actually, privately, of my two. Well, actually, I had four, but
looked delicious.
They were very good. They were between a king and a tiger medium. They were actually from Argentina, because there's no fresh prawns in this country. But they were sustainably imported, if that's possible, and they were delicious. Yeah. But then I'd got the bug, so I went to a place which is a shop and a restaurant in the middle of a wind farm on the North Sea. And I went there, and it's a wonderful shop, and it's a farm of mussels and oysters. So it goes out there with a little boat every morning, and at lunchtime as well, brings in the fresh mussels and the mussels and oysters, and sells it or serves it in its restaurant. And they have something called a mussel box. So I bought the mussel box. In the mussel box is a kilo of mussels, just freshly farmed, a bottle of delicious wine, quite good quality white wine, actually, a big sachet of herbs, which they've concocted themselves because they go with mussels, and quite a large packet of chopped vegetables. And I get home, I stick it in the wok, the spices and the vegetables, get it steaming hot, put in the white wine, and it starts to bubble and steam. Put the mussels in, put the lid on top, six minutes later.
Delicious.
Oh my God, you've no idea, Wayne. 6 minutes later, I've got my mussels. Oh gosh. It's mussel season here.
Good friend of mine from Momentum, who's now emigrated to Ireland. We were in London once and he took me to a Belgian restaurant in London, just with long trestle tables, no separate table, just these long trestle tables.
Yes.
And you just grabbed a spot anywhere on these trestle tables, and they just put brown paper down on the trestle tables, and you could choose from two things. Well, you could choose from one thing in two different varieties. could get curried mussels or mussels like you've described now, cooked in the white wine sort of sauce.
Yeah, my favorite.
And they just bought a bucket. They just bought a bucket and put it down in front of you. Another plate with some very nice bread and some butter, so you could put some butter on your bread, and you got a spoon or whatever it was. And that's all they served. And it was totally, and I had the curry one, it was totally delicious. So, I mean, these people, they knew how to do mussels because that's all they did. And I must say, it was quite a culinary experience. I forget the restaurant's name, but it was truly delicious. But yeah, in Johannesburg, you want prawns. I mean, the Troyville prawns are good. Ocean Basket prawns are good.
Isn't there an Ocean Basket prawns in Illovo? I used to go there, I think.
No, there's many Ocean Baskets. It's a franchise.
Yeah.
But their prawns are good, and you actually get very good value for money for when you buy their plate of prawns sort of thing. But the best prawns are still Prawns National
Mozambican
at Sesco's.
Oh, okay.
It's cooked in a wine and herby type of sauce with lots of garlic. Not overwhelmingly powerful from the peri-peri point of view. It is totally and utterly the best prawns I've ever had. Normally, I don't like prawns in a sauce.
No.
You know, I just like them butterfly grilled, and then you add your garlic or whatever you else want. But these Nationals are absolutely terrific. And then you get the Bilo Fritos with it, which is the little, not chippies, polenta type of little squares, nice and crispy on the outside. It's absolutely delicious.
Wayne, I have to tell you that my mania, inspired by you, continued, because on Monday morning, the Germans and the Belgians are starting to leave this very touristy area in which I live.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, I'm going to go to this place. I'm going to go to this other restaurant. Also on the sea. You go there at 11:30 on a Monday morning, it's raining, the tourists have gone, so you're on your own. And they have 8 different types of oysters. Now, what I had was 2 different types of Dutch oysters, local ones to support the local economy, French oysters, Irish oysters, and Portuguese as well. And I had 6 to start, and then I just couldn't contain myself. I had another 6, and then I had another 6 after that. The Portuguese were the best. And I got such a taste for it. I don't eat them with Tabasco or lemon. I just slosh them down.
Like a lemon.
And chew them a little bit as well. And they were so delicious. The next day, I had such a mania for oysters. I went up to the market square here, and there's a place, a fish handle, which is in English fish shop. And I asked the geezer, I said, can you give me a dozen oysters, please? But I haven't got a shucker at home, you know, one of those things that opens the oysters. And he said, wait 20 minutes, I'll open them for you. And I tell you what, okay. Wayne, there's something just special about an oyster occasionally.
I've got 3 little stories, 2 of them about oysters.
Go on then.
Both in Walvis Bay. I once went there with a company on business to do presentations, and the chaps there organized a trip in one of the fishing boats out to the oyster farms in the middle of Walvis Bay, and he pulled out a cage of oysters there, and he opened them up, and we ate it on the boat in the middle of Walvis Bay.
Wonderful.
And it was clearly fresh, and it was totally delicious, with some nice brown bread with some butter on it.
Mm.
Delicious. Then I went, beginning of this year, to Walvis, well, Swakopmund Walvis again, and we went on a tour of the bay in a big like catamaran. It was lovely. I mean, you saw lots of wildlife. You had to actually chase the pelicans off your boat. You had to chase the seals off your boat. And they served smoked oysters as part of the sort of lunchtime, mid-morning lunchtime brunch sort of thing. And they were delicious. But then you're talking about ordering 6 and ordering 6 more. My good friend and I, there was a restaurant, I think it was in Rosebank, called Tsunami. And they used to have prawn specials, eat as much as you like. And we went there and we ate and we ate and we ate. And then the waiter comes to us and says, do you want any more? And we both said, no, 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 we're full now. And he looked at us and he said, are you here to eat prawns or what?
A challenge.
We ordered another plate. So we ordered another plate. Because in the sort of early 2000s, prawns were actually really cheap.
They were peasant foods.
They were way cheaper than steak. So you could actually get yourself a kilo of prawns at a very reasonable price. Things that are a bit different nowadays. But you can still get a good prawn dish for, well, the Prawns National, if I'm not mistaken, is under 200. And that's an extremely good dish. And then at the Honey Rock, you can get the queen prawn platter, which is more than enough for, I think, about $300.
Not bad.
$325 or something.
Yes, again, I'm drooling, Wayne. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. Thank you very much for your reminiscences and your market analysis. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.